Welcome. This is a great crowd and really a great opportunity for me to share some things that have become very important to me over the years. You know, the topic that we're going to cover is going to be radically different than what you're probably hearing at other sessions throughout EDUCAUSE. But if you aspire to senior leadership in IT, I'm going to tell you these are the knowledge that's kept me going all these years. The EDUCAUSE Leadership Program really is designed to generate the next group of IT leaders. When I was coming up many years ago, we didn't have these kind of programs. But EDUCAUSE and its efforts has pulled together some CIOs and even CFOs and others that have put together some great programs that you should take advantage of. To give you a little bit more information about the EDUCAUSE Leadership Program, it's really designed to broaden your perspective on different things that you'll require as a future IT leader, or you may even be a senior leader right at this moment looking for knowledge that might help you. It really is more than just passive presentations from CIOs. It's a full immersion experience. You get to apply the knowledge, you get to talk about it in teams, and you'll be given projects, so it'll be a very intensive 5-day period. But it's more than just this 1-week period that we have each summer. It's really about building a network of peers and mentors that can help you. I know over the years I've depended on my mentors to give me knowledge and insight to how I could be a better CIO. And I'm telling you, it's become indispensable to me. Now, as we look at last year, we did a survey of 150 senior university executives from 50 different universities. And we asked them, what were the leadership abilities that you needed at your university in your CIO? And this is what we came up with. Our existing leadership program tackled almost all these topics, including knowledge of the university, the ability to think strategically, the ability to execute and to communicate and to make decisions driven by data. And these other attributes we also covered as well. But the one area we didn't cover, and we were a little surprised to get this from all the universities because it seemed a little bit out there on the edge, it was about the importance of self-awareness. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Really, the knowledge of the self, the ability to have some emotional intelligence and to apply that intelligence in the development of relationships, the ability to handle stress and to maintain your wellness. These are all considered to be the foundation for leadership. And what I found surprising, though I totally agreed with it, was they said that if you didn't have this basic foundation, you could add all these other abilities and it would be building like a skyscraper on a foundation of sand. So that's why I decided that we would expand the existing leadership program and include this important topic. It's become really in leadership development one of the hottest topics today is dealing with this whole area of self-awareness. There are about a dozen books that have come out. I've read about half of them. So I'll share some of that knowledge with you today. But also what's interesting is that it's also created a number of centers and institutes. The University of Massachusetts has a center devoted to this. And so we see that there's becoming a growing recognition of the importance of self-awareness. Well, today what we're going to deal with, we're going to give you a better understanding of what self-awareness is. Why is it important to leadership, and how do you go about even developing it? Well, going back in time, self-awareness, the importance of it, has been known for some time. In fact, we can go all the way back to recorded history, back to the early writings of the Greeks, and said there was a maxim right above the Apollo temple at Delphi where they basically said, know thyself, the one maxim, know thyself. At the very foundation of most of the writings of Plato was to know yourself. Well, what the heck does that mean? You know, and why is it important? Well, Socrates said that the unexamined life is not worth living. Further, he indicated that without knowledge of the self, we go through life as a sleepwalker. Well, what does that mean? Well, basically, we are really conditioned through our family, through our culture, with all kinds of subconscious conditioning, including habits, our beliefs, our bias, and our many stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves and others. And so what are some of those stories? Well, one of my stories that I learned, I probably in childhood, a number of them I'll share with you, was I thought that the source of all happiness was out there, as well as the source of unhappiness. I thought that if I just worked hard and did things, that I would eventually find happiness. And even as I worked my way up to the CIO position, I thought I had arrived. This was an illusion, and I want to share with that, that I discovered that for myself. You may have your own that you have to work through. But that is what Socrates, I think, was talking about, is that unless we become aware of these conditioning, unless we bring that subconscious into the conscious, we're really just a sleepwalker. And in fact, someone even more recently said that unless we become aware of these factors, we are conditioned to do things unconsciously. And Einstein said, if you do this over and over again and expect a different result, you're actually insane. I don't know if I would go that far, but I can tell you, if you visualize this image, the hamster in the cage running round and round on that circle, until you can get outside of the cage, you're destined to run in circles. And unless you're conscious of this unconditional conditioning, you really are a sleepwalker, and you're not likely to be able to break out of it until it becomes, you brings into your awareness. Well, what is self-awareness? Well, some philosophers have debated this issue for many decades, even centuries. And René Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. However, I would reverse this order. As the Danish philosopher, Søren Kierkegaard, if I haven't ruined his name, and say, I am, therefore I think. At the very foundation of our existence is our ability to think. And that is really due to being first aware. Without awareness, you're just unconscious. So awareness really is at the foundation of who we are. And really, you can think about awareness as light in a dark room. Without adequate light, we could often mistake a rope for a snake and actually be filled with fear as we look at that. The image is kind of fuzzy. It could be a snake, and we are worried. The only antidote in this situation is to impose more resolution and more light, or in this case, the analog to this is awareness. There are a number of examples of this in our own life that we can see the analogy between the snake and the rope and awareness. For example, we hear someone say something that seems critical to us, and we take it personally. In fact, we carry it around in our heart and our mind for days, weeks, months, and it affects our behavior. It affects our level of happiness. But until we can get beyond that to a more truthful understanding of what's going on, we're going to be controlled by these events. So how do we go about really defining who we are? If someone were to come up to you right now and say, who are you? You might respond with something about your job, your family, maybe even something about your physical makeup or your emotional makeup, what you're feeling or what you're thinking. But are these all accurate descriptions of what and who you really are? We, as the observer in this case, may actually confuse those things that we are attached to with who we really are. So let's go through and dive into a little bit about what we mean by attachment. And you all remember when you were an adolescent and how important the body was, your image, your clothing, right? And in fact, if you remember in adolescence, and thank God we're out of that phase, but if you recall, we were attached to it. What people thought about us affected what we thought about ourselves. So if we were somehow imperfect in our physical makeup, we were imperfect, and that's how we thought about ourselves. And thank God I've grown beyond that phase, because I know I'm not getting any better looking. And so the way I would feel about myself wouldn't be any better, I assure you. But you remember, you can remember what that was like when you were young. The importance of what others thought about you, what you looked like, what clothes you wore, it really overshadowed and really conditioned who you are. Well, we may have gotten beyond that whole phase of identification, but where we haven't, I know I'm challenged, is gotten beyond the identification with other things, like our thoughts. So if our thoughts are inferior to someone else's thinking, we somehow might consider ourselves to be inferior. However, on the other hand, and in a university this often happens, if we think our thoughts are superior, we somehow associate that as though we are somehow superior. In fact, such great passion we can hold about our beliefs and our thoughts, and even in families, we often put restrictions on, well, we can talk about it at the dinner table because there's so much passion about politics and religion that we just say, we can't go there. The whole issue of beliefs can even affect things like terrorism and war and people's willingness to kill others just because they believe something different. I'll give you an example. Here in this picture here is an incident back in 2008 in Mumbai, India, where some terrorists massacred 156 individuals, including probably one of my best friends and his daughter. It was absolutely a horrible incident. Here you see Alan and Naomi there in the lower right, and to the left is Kia, Alan's wife. And after this incident, she was left without a child and without a husband. Yet somehow she was able to rise above it. And how did she do that? She actually forgave the terrorists, something that seems almost unforgivable, is to forgive someone who killed your husband and your only child. Well, I asked her, I said, how could you do that? I'm not sure I could do that. And she said, the young boy, who wasn't much out of, he was a teenager of 18 or 19, who committed this horrible act in addition to several others, was raised since childhood, very young age, to hate those of us in the West and to believe that somehow they were going to get some kind of reward in heaven if they committed this act. And she said, hanging on to that, she actually asked the Indian government to not put him to death because she felt that, you know, in a way, even though it was a horrible act, the young man was doing the best he could with what he was given. It blows me away that she was able to rise above it. A book came out, was a bestseller called Forgiving the Unforgivable. And in fact, she set up an organization called One Life Alliance. And it's having great success in pulling together kids from all over the world in the one recognition that while we all may have different beliefs and views of the world, the one thing that we all share is life. And the sacredness of life is so special that she felt that it might actually help us to transcend our differences and see that we actually share something very basic and common. And here she is with our reelected president, President Obama, in India back in 2009, creating this organization. She's an amazing individual. But what she points to is the importance of letting go of identification with negative emotion and things like revenge, that if we hold on to this identification with these things, they can color and even harm our ability to interact with others, and they can affect our level of happiness. We can see this happen when we lose our temper. We're often too identified with anger and so explode in an uncontrollable way. I don't know if you've ever had the experience, but you've seen anger bubble up and you can see it coming. There's a little distance between you and what's happening, and you're at choice. You can decide whether to act on that anger or not. Well, in Gestalt therapy, there's an old saying that says, awareness equals responsibility. So if you can be aware of that emotion in the moment, you can be responsible for it. Often it is said in leadership training that if you can name it, you can tame it. And the ability to name something really is that little space that we need, that little detachment from that strong emotion that can color our reaction. And as a leader, you have to have control over your emotions. You have to have that kind of ability. Well, as we begin to look at and really examine who we are, there's a process. We started with the discussion of Socrates, but he has something called the Socratic method, which is really a logical means of inquiry to the discovery of truth about ourselves. So, for example, if you can observe something, then you must not be it. It's very evident when we look at trees or we look at clouds that we are not either one of these. Why? Because we are here and they are there. If we begin to look at our physical body and we look at our hands, we look at our skin, our feet, the hands don't think, I am a hand. We think, here's a hand. We also observe our thoughts. We observe our emotions. And likewise, when we look at these things, we realize that we are observing them. So we are not those things. So if we can observe our thoughts and our emotions, our body, or trees and clouds, then we are not any of these things. So the question is, what are we? We are simply awareness, pure awareness. And I know this is a radical concept because most of you are attached to everything you believe yourself to be at this moment. But I assure you that the only truthful thing that I've observed in myself after many years of pursuit of this is that is the one thing I know that I am. It's unchanging. It's been that way since the beginning. And the only thing that's changing is the brightness of that light of awareness can grow. Well, an essential part of leadership is to serve as a model for others. Or as Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see in the world. Develop self-awareness in yourself and then take that balance into the world, into your organization, and transform it. You're the catalyst for that change. You're the model for that change. If you're not walking the talk, who will follow you? Self-awareness is really about being comfortable, ultimately, with who you are. The happier you are with yourself, the more likely you are to treat others with kindness. To lead people, you must understand them, and the only way you can truly understand others is by understanding yourself. Successful leading a leadership is really about leading people. The one thing I've noticed as I've gone up the ladder of leadership is that more and more I'm dealing with people, not technology, not software. I'm dealing with other leaders. I'm dealing with people all the time. So one of the most fundamental things that you're going to have to master is your ability to interact with others. Through growth of self-awareness, we gain greater self-control. We gain greater understanding of others because there is really only one model for really truly understanding everyone else, both the external side of them and the internal side, and that's ourselves. Once you can begin to truly understand yourself, you can then better understand others. So in this model here, self-awareness can lead to self-control, can lead to awareness of others, and ultimately lead to the development of relationships. I have a whole module that we spend on relationship management. But at the very foundation to building those relationships is the foundation of self-awareness and emotional intelligence. Without that, you're going to have a difficult time building the kind of relationships that allow you to lead your university on the IT path. Well, what really determines our level of self-awareness? Well, the level amount of attachment we have to those untruthful associations, but also the balance between our mental, physical, and emotional side. University wellness programs often expand this to six dimensions and include the spiritual and environmental and social sides as well. But let's just focus on the three most fundamental areas that you have to consider to balance yourself. Everyone understands the first one, and that's the physical side. We all know we should be getting some exercise, but how many of us take time to do that? Everyone tells me, well, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time. But I'm telling you, if you don't set aside enough time to get some basic exercise, even if it's a 30-minute walk, you're going to find that ultimately, over time, your ability to perform is going to be diminished. At our university, our wellness program has been expanded, and we had over 600 faculty and staff engage in daily walks together. Can you imagine that? And we had competitions for the different teams. So we created a bunch of teams, and we had competition for those who could get in the most steps. I still wear my pedometer if I want to win that prize. Yesterday, walking around this place, I don't know about you, but I got in about 13, 14,000 steps. 2,000 steps is a mile. Got my share of exercise. So we try to get 10,000 steps every day. Now, you can substitute other things. You can do swimming, basketball, all create the equivalent. But it basically gives you a guideline for what we need to do. You need to get the proper diet and rest. Now, we all know this, but we often don't take care of that basic. I'd like to expand that now to a couple other dimensions, and that's the emotional dimension. Just like Kia was able to detach from that negative emotion and flow the positive, we need to do more of that. We need to really look at how we are dealing with our emotional makeup and begin to flow positive emotions. And it may be something as simple as just showing gratefulness and acceptance to your staff and your family. Just going up and thanking them. Just go up and smile. Do you know they've done studies to show that if you just smile, brain chemistry changes, endorphins kick in? A simple smile can really just affect the way you and others feel. Mental balance. Positive thinking. How many golfers do we have? Any golfers? Yeah? Okay, then you're going to resonate. I'm a golfer. You step up in front of that ball, right? You know that if you don't target that ball, it's not going where you want. But the designer of the golf course has figured out if they stick water right next to you, they're going to psych you out. What often happens until people figure out how to do target golf and get the ball and keep focused and positive where they want the ball, they get distracted by the water and the ball goes in the water every time. And life is like that. If you can't keep positive and focused on where you want to go and you let the negative naysayers, whether it's people or whether it's water, whatever the hazard be, get you distracted, it's going to affect your performance. But ultimately, in my opinion, the best overall balancing technique that I've ever discovered is called meditation. And I want to share with you some insight into meditation. Why do we meditate? Well, meditation is becoming very popular. It was interesting when in the leadership program I introduced this concept in the last couple summers, I found half of our faculty discovered this for themselves. Meditation is really where we go into a state of stillness and peace. The emotion, the mind, the body all quiets down. And to ultimately what we are experiencing is a state of pure awareness. And I can tell you that that state in duration goes beyond just simple peace and stillness to actual bliss. And I can assure you it's almost like sticking your hand in a honey jar and then pulling your hand out and it's filled with honey. The reason we meditate is not necessarily for the high we get in meditation. No, that's good. It's because we take that experience out into activity, and it improves our activity. It, through the cycle of doing meditation and activity, we begin to bring that stillness and peace into our activity until the point when we're feeling that quiet peacefulness, even in the middle of activity. The things that you can expect from meditation are well documented. It improves concentration by keeping a clear mind. So you can be more present for people in the moment. You can be a better listener. And I've discovered that this is the case for myself. You become less bothered by things that would get you normally. And they kind of bounce off your back. They've actually done studies where they measure galvanic skin response. And they can show that meditators really don't respond harmfully to stressors. And they respond and normalize even quicker. Better health, it reduces stress. Blood pressure is normalized just simply through meditation. And people have found that it improves your creativity by allowing you to dive into the subconscious and bring out creative solutions to problems you're facing. And finally, it really enables us to learn more about ourselves and to inquire into ourselves, the process we were just talking about. Here are a number of leaders, well-known leaders, that meditate. Did you know Steve Jobs was a meditator? Steve Jobs said that meditation taught him to concentrate and ignore distractions and trust his intuition. He was an outstanding leader, and he thought that meditation gave him an extra boost to be more successful. Larry Ellison is one of the well-known meditators. In fact, he believes so much in meditation, and a couple of my friends are senior members of his staff, or were at one point. He encourages all of them. And in fact, when Larry encourages you, it's a little bit more than encouragement. He actually asks you to meditate 2 to 3 times a day. But it's nice to know that he gives you that opportunity. In fact, Marc Benioff of Salesforce.com was a former staffer at Larry, as I recall, and that's where he learned to meditate. And he says, I find meditation to be enables to get a clear mind. But ultimately, what Dave Lynch, who is one of my one of the famous film producers, and produces one of my favorite films, Dune. I don't know if you like Dune, but my wife doesn't, and we always debate when it comes on. She says, you've seen it for like the 50th time. I said, yeah, it's such a great movie. Well, what Dave Lynch's comment was resonated with me. He said, true happiness is not out there, it's in here. That was something I discovered for myself, and I thought I'd share it with you because I totally agree. So you can see how there are leaders that have found the benefits of meditation. There are a number of different types of meditation you can use. I've tried them all. Transcendental meditation, which uses the mantra to focus and help you dive deep within. Buddhist mindfulness meditation is also very popular, some called insight meditation. It's also a very effective technique. However, I, being a technologist, I've discovered why not use technology? And so I discovered a technique about a dozen years ago called high-tech meditation. And it actually works on brainwave synchrony. It actually meditates you. And so you really don't have to do anything except sit there and just listen to the tape. And they can actually, and they've hooked me up recently, they can actually measure this. This is measurable. That makes it even more interesting to me. I'm an analytic nut. I love data. So why shouldn't you be able to measure your state of peace? You can. And the way they look for it is that the delta waves that normally would manifest only in deep sleep are there in your waking state, as are theta and beta waves. So they can actually measure this and show that that level of peace is actually objective and measurable. As we come into balance, pure awareness tends to become more dominant in our day-to-day life. And in fact, as it becomes more dominant, we actually reach a grounded, self-actualized state that is, we begin to realize we're getting more peaceful and happy. In fact, spiritual mystical traditions, and even now modern psychology, set this as a goal for all of us to go for. And in fact, one day you wake up and you realize that you're happy for no good reason. And there's a book titled by that that really goes into this in more depth. But it's true. I've discovered it for myself that it is possible to change your level of happiness, your level of productivity. But you can't do this by reading it in a book. You can't do this by listening to me. As much as it would be great if I could just go, woom, and you all would have this. You have to do something. And this is where my challenge to you comes. Give me 30 days just to try what I'm talking about. Just get 30 minutes of exercise every day. Look at your diet. Make sure you're getting all the balance that you need. Get some sunshine or take a multivitamin. Smile and try to manage your emotion and be more grateful to others. Stay positive and think. And if you need to, and if the negative talk that you're experiencing is so great, use an affirmation like yes or yes, I can. In fact, some presidents have even said, yes, we can, right? It's an affirmation. And you'll find that if you use those, it will help to diminish the strength of some of your negative self-talk, bad habits that you've probably learned and don't even know that exist. But watch it, and you'll see that. And finally, try meditation. You do all this for 30 days, and I guarantee you'll notice a difference. You do this for 6 months, and you will be transformed. I absolutely guarantee it. And not only will you know it, but everyone around you will begin to see the difference and say, there's something different about you. What are you doing? Absolutely guarantee it. Now, for those who want to try this, I'll be there to help you. I'll be there to advise you. Here's my email. You can write to me. You can ask me. I would love to hear from you if you do try this. And then I would be happy to refer you to anybody or any source that would provide you more information. And that's really what I have today. And I hope that some of you will consider joining us next summer at the leadership program. And we can talk more about that. We can talk more about it now, in specific to the self-awareness. But we can talk more at length about leadership if you attend some of these programs. I'd like to open it up to discussion. Is there anybody here who has done some of these things that would like to share with us some of the benefits of what they've discovered? Yes. Yeah.
So don't come up with an excuse that you don't have 8 minutes for the day.
Right. And because this is being streamed, we need to use a speaker, so I'm going to repeat your comment. He was saying he's discovered a book about the 8-minute meditation. And he's discovered that following that has given him great benefit. I did an exercise in my class this last summer related to this. I had them all sit down, and I taught them how to meditate for 5 minutes. Just 5 minutes as an exercise. I said, what we're going to do is a simple mindfulness meditation that was popular with Zen. And in fact, it actually resulted in the enlightenment of the Buddha. It's a simple technique, and I could teach it to you all now, but it's just watching the breath. You just relax, you just quiet yourself down, and you just watch the breath. If your mind drifts, as it will, as this gentleman was saying, it will drift. Just gently bring it back to the breath. Just gently bring it back. In a period of 5 minutes, how many times do you think the average person shifts from watching the breath to thought and back and forth again? 5 times? 10 times? People couldn't count how many times. We're not even aware how active our mind is. It's just so active. And in fact, some people found it difficult to even sit there for 5 minutes. So that is a helpful exercise just to bring awareness to even what is the basal level of your thinking. How can you really be present for someone if your mind is constantly thinking? Maybe you're thinking about what you're going to say next rather than listening to what they have to say. So this is actually an important discovery that you can have. Anybody else have any experience with this? Yes.
Hi. One thing I wanted to mention,
yes.
And I apologize, I'm not trying to promote a book. But there was a book by Eckhart Tolle.
Yes.
Yes. And that actually reflects what you're talking about now, about gathering control of your thoughts, not letting thoughts become an addiction.
Yes. Excellent.
And I read the first 2 chapters of the book. Sometimes I had to read it repeatedly because it gives you nice examples. Every time I reread a section, as I was becoming more self-aware, those sections had different meanings each and every time.
Yes.
But it helped me achieve what you're talking about.
Exactly. Excellent. He mentioned the book, Eckhart Tolle, The Power Now. How many people have read that best-selling book? It's a great book. And in fact, Oprah Winfrey did a whole series on that book. I don't know if you saw those series. You can still find it on the web. It's a fantastic series. So, yeah, he's wonderful. And you should definitely take a look at that book. But what the book doesn't give you is the technique. You got to do something, right? It's not enough just to read the book. The book kind of points the direction. But you have to do something, don't you? Absolutely. Anybody else want to share? I mean, I really do think that the importance of these kinds of techniques are important. Anybody else want to share with us? How about exercise? Anybody doing some regular exercise at all? You doing some? I see you shaking your head. Yeah? I mean, I think the challenge is, we always say, well, there's not enough time to meditate, not enough time to exercise, not enough time. But I'm a guy that probably has less time than just about anybody. I am very busy. But I have discovered that if I don't set aside the time for these things, my productivity is going to diminish. And so in terms of time management, I manage my time so I get this stuff in every day, because I've discovered the benefits that we do. So even just trying this to show yourself that these things can really pan out, I think is well worth it. Well, do you have any other questions? Do you have any questions of me? Yes. Can you go to a microphone, because I'm having a hard time hearing you? Sorry.
Assuming this was a process for you to be able to come to this point where you've realized all these things in life. Through this process, have you had any difficulties with your ego?
With what?
With your ego.
Ego. Well, another word for the ego are these attachments, these false attachments, or what I call the false identity. And yes, the ego is something we create, and it actually has value at a certain stage to help us have confidence and so forth. But at some point, we can grow beyond that. And so, yes, the ego can be a negative and a block. But what the ego really is the illusion of all these attachments. The ego is what is created really to help us survive and perpetuate ourselves. But it is not our true identity, and it is just a servant to who we really are. So it's important to really kind of witness or see what that is. But it is really that creation of things, all those attachments, all those beliefs about ourselves and others, that really comprises what that is. Okay? So that's one name for a lot of different things. But you're right. I think the ego is something that you get beyond. It is something that you transcend. And ultimately, they say that in enlightenment, that is what you've gone beyond that. And you live in that state of non-attachment and pure awareness 24/7. And in fact, you know, when we go to sleep, we often go unconscious. But when people reach that state of pure awareness, they are aware even in sleep. And so they see dreams lucidly. They actually are aware in deep sleep. So that awareness, that light we're talking about, can get brighter and brighter and even burn through those levels of unconscious states. Yes, any questions? Yes. Sure. Yeah, I think one of the ways is that it just gives you more energy. You're more positive. You're happier and not as dependent upon outside things for your motivation. I found, for example, that often I was too focused on the end point rather than the journey. And let's face it, 99% of what we're doing is the journey. And so if you can't enjoy the journey, your life's not very, very happy. And so while it's nice to enjoy the fruits of what we're doing, I've discovered one basic thing, that if you want to enjoy the fruit of your leadership, you better water the root, right? Take care of yourself first, because that's what you take into battle every day. If you're not prepared for dealing with the relationships, with the demands of your job, I'm going to tell you, my first year as a CIO many years ago was very stressful. I had all kinds of health problems as a result. I aspired to the CIO job for many years, and when I finally got it, I said, is this what I really wanted? And so I discovered most of these things just out of necessity of survival. If I didn't do these things, I wouldn't be successful. And so it helps me in every dimension of work, in family, relationships, everything. So, yeah, I mean, one of the literature seems to be more focused on the emotional intelligence. That's a very hot topic now. In fact, I think there was even a pre-session on that. We have more humanistic discussion at this EDUCAUSE than ever before, but that's because it's becoming, I think, a recognition is coming that it's important for our success to deal with these sides of things. You know, we all focus on the doing side, but unless we're dealing with the being side too, we get out of balance. And we're not going to be as effective. So, you know, I think a whole range of things. You saw all the examples from many meditators there. I've experienced all those and more. Yeah, it's a good question. Any other questions? Okay, I want to thank you all. For those who want to come down, would like to have a more intimate discussion, I'll stay here and happy to engage with you. For those who would like to ask me a question later, I'll be happy to answer it there. Thank you so much.